Okay, now we can start.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
If you build it, they will come. Joel, seen that movie? He's in the movie, Joe.
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Jordan Malley. Jordan, great to see you. Through our 670 score scope. Yep.
Where is he?
And it's right over there, Bill.
Did Matt Peck get a signed copy of that book?
No, Matt Peck, he didn't. No. No. I'll talk to D. Rose.
Yeah, guys.
Matt, well, you will be getting your book soon.
Kick back and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
And so all I was saying on this podcast, the Locked On Bulls podcast.
Locked On Bulls starts now.
The Locked On Bulls podcast.
You can just see the vibe.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369. Drop your text, your voicemails, anything you got for us, 331-979-1369. Our sponsor for today's episode is Rock Auto. Visit rockauto.com and make sure you mention Locked On in the How Do You Hear About Us tab. Matt, awesome interview with Darnell Mayberry, and I know our listeners got to hear the first portion of it yesterday's episode, but wanted to give them the second part of that today, but felt there was definitely a need for us to jump on the mics, react to some of our voicemails that we've been getting in over the past few days, and just talk about what the hell is going on with this team that hasn't played a game in 5 months. But how are you?
What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Man, has it really been 5 months? Holy crap.
Mid-March, right?
Time is like standing still and going a mile a minute somehow at the same time. The Bulls' last game was March 10th. So, yeah. I mean, here we are.
Four and some change.
July. Yeah. And I mean, I'm it's awesome that people are still, you know, texting in and calling into our voicemail line and, you know, talking about all things Bulls when we're in the smack dab in the middle of probably the longest dormant stretch that Bulls basketball will ever have, assuming, you know, knock on wood, we don't have another global pandemic anytime soon, once we hopefully manage to get this one under control. But, you know, there is some general excitement, even I think among Bulls fans, in the sense that like NBA basketball in general is right around the corner. You know, as we're recording this Wednesday afternoon, we got some exhibition games on deck later today that don't quite count for anything yet in the bubble, but they start real competitive games in the bubble a week from tomorrow on July 30th. So it's an exciting time. And I know, you know, maybe some Bulls fans wish that we were actually getting to watch some Bulls basketball right now. I'm fine with just talking about what's going on with the Bulls and then actually enjoying watching NBA basketball instead of having to watch the Bulls.
It's a process.
Feels like the last 3 years of Bulls basketball is having fun, enjoying talking about all of the juicy scoops we're getting here with this team. Not so much the basketball on the floor, and then enjoying actual basketball with real talent and real cohesion, real chemistry, and actual winning basketball. But your conversation with Darnell has been fantastic, and I know there's been a buzz around Jim Boylan's job, whether he's staying, he's going, with Jim Boylan speaking last week, and we got some firing shots from Daniel Gafford, which hopefully tomorrow maybe we can come back to that. I know you touched on it in your solo episode, but man, that was just, yeah, it was just too funny. It was just too funny. Oh, man. But I think without further ado, let's just get straight to our voicemails because we got four really good ones to get to. So here is the first one. And before we get to it, you can drop your voicemails, 331-979-1369. Drop those for us or your text messages if you want to get off a burning thought or hit us up on Twitter. But first up is Luke in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Hey, guys. It's Luke from Lincoln. I got two things I want to bring up. One, you guys been watching the TBT, the basketball tournament, with a whole bunch of these alumni teams? Because that's about as much fun as I've ever had watching dads play basketball in my whole life. Because everybody misses it. It's just been a lot of fun. So I just want to know if you guys have been watching and if you guys have been shocked by anything or entertained by it. But my second thought, and this is the more important one, really, anything's possible. It's a crazy world we live in. Ryan Yerkes-Diakono for Bubble MVP. You heard me. if he can win the one-on-one tournament that we did, I don't know how long ago, when Jim Boylan decided he was going to be Archie's daddy for the rest of his life, Ryan Archie Diacono for bubble MVP. All right. You guys have a good one. Love the show. What's up, guys? It's Luke from Lincoln again. Hey, simple question. Do you think it's possible that we are underselling Coby White because we're afraid of giving him a Lowry Marketing treatment? Where we give him, he's got a great rookie year, and then we saddle him with, oh, this guy's going to be the alpha, or this guy's going to be, you know, the one piece that's still here when we're a playoff, you know, championship contending team, and we're afraid of being disappointed again. It's kind of like how people are still skittish about AK and Eversley because they've got PTSD from Garpax. So I wonder if we're not really looking at Coby White all that clearly because we're afraid of being disappointed. I don't know. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
So first, absolutely not Ryan Archie Diacono for bubble MVP. I mean, what are your standards? Denzel Valentine winning the MVP in the Summer League a few years ago and Bulls winning championships there? I don't think a second bubble is going to happen, but I guess we'll see about that. But Matt, I want to talk about more his second point about Coby White and just maybe the overreaction we tend to have about the front office and retraining our brains like we've been talking about the last few weeks.
Yeah. First of all, I agree with you. Second bubble, not happening. I will be shocked if that second bubble happens. If it did happen, I don't think Archie's winning MVP of the second bubble. I'm sorry. It's
come on, you know, man.
If our pal Luke was joking, funny joke. And yes, he did win the team's one-on-one tournament during training camp, which I guess maybe should have been a sign for the awful, awful things to come. But yeah, as far as how the fan base has viewed Coby this season, it's hard to put all of it in perspective just because this season was so wonky and so terrible. I know the fan base was growing more and more frustrated with Jim Boylan's lack of answers when the question kept resurfacing, why aren't you starting Coby? Why aren't you starting Coby? Especially when the roster was getting really thin and Luke's BFF, Ryan Archie Diacono, was getting starts ahead of Coby, and that didn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to anybody. As far as comparing him and expectations to Lowry, I think there might be some correlation there that I can see what Luke is talking about, because I know myself, and I think you did too, Jordan, after Lowry's rookie year, we're feeling all kinds of high expectations for Lowry and his star potential in this league. I would say I wasn't feeling quite the same about Coby after watching this season, and maybe that's not entirely Coby's fault, given the fact that, yeah, he ended on a really high note. And like his numbers post All-Star break were really, really impressive. But that followed the first half of the NBA season where Coby's numbers were the opposite of really impressive. They were just downright bad when you're talking about his consistency, his shooting, his effective field goal percentage. And again, some of that may have been him trying to adjust to Boylan and the Bulls coaching staff, basically telling him to go against his nature and score the way he scored at UNC because of this offensive system they were trying to install. As for what I see lying ahead for Coby and how Bulls fans, you know, feel about the expectations for him, I do feel like they're a little bit too high right now because of the finish he had to the season. I think Coby can be a hell of a scorer and a player in this league, but all of a sudden, because of that finish to the season that he had, I'm maybe worrying that we're going back down that Lowry path where we're putting too much on his shoulders right now.
It is an interesting comparison when you think about both of those guys. And you just think about the expectations that we had for Markkanen back in 2017. For me, Matt, it was okay. I know this guy's 19, 20 years old. I know it's going to be pretty rough for the most part, but if I can see glimpses in games here and there where it's like, okay, I see the star potential, I see the reason why they took him with a lottery pick, I'll be more than happy. And I felt like Lowry's rookie year, we saw that. Like, think about the dunk against the Knicks where Fred Hoiberg said he was damn near about to pass out after he threw it down. Like, little instances like that made me think, okay, I've got some expectations for Markkanen, even if his numbers don't necessarily translate to what you want them to be in the first year. I think similarly for Coby White, the biggest distinction here is Markkanen started all 68 games he played in. Coby White started in one. He started in one game. And think about the team that was around Lowry Markkanen compared to Coby White 3 years ago. I would argue outside of Zach LaVine, the team was this year was awful. All the injuries that they had to culminate together, and Jim Boylan coaching as well. Lauri Markkanen at least had a core of guys, be it young guys like Chris Dunn. He had guys around him consistently so he could grow some chemistry and learn to play a little bit more. So I think the expectations might have been a little bit too high for Coby White, and I don't necessarily blame Bulls fans for that. I think it was more the hype around the draft before he got picked and then the surprise that he dropped all the way to 7. But I could feel the similar expectations between both of those guys.
Yeah, and I think they were both number 7 picks, but I think Lowry was a number 7 pick in a collectively much stronger draft class. And of course, everybody was really excited about Zion this year. And then, like, you know, Ja was kind of like 1B as far as picks to get excited about. So the Bulls falling to 7, especially this team that still is trying to find an answer, a point guard, were pretty disappointed knowing that we probably missed out not only on a potential franchise changer like Zion, but also Ja Morant. And then even, you know, I think you and I kind of had, you know, Ja Morant, and then beyond that, Garland, and then maybe Coby White third in the, you know, initial list of what point guard would you take. After their collective rookie seasons, I think maybe it's looking like Coby White might have a brighter future than Darius Garland based on just some of the impressive and dominant nights that he had. But it's still, you know, compared to Lowry, a more underwhelming draft class. I'm just hoping that we get proper development in Lowry's fourth year and Coby's second year, respectively, with a different coaching staff and a more competent and fleshed out player development staff, because that's what the primary concern of all Bulls fans should be right now. It's not, you know, are we putting too much pressure on Lowry or Coby? Are the expectations too high, too low, whatever? We just want both of them and all players on this young roster to get better. And then for AK and his crew to figure out which pieces fit and which pieces they should move.
I think it's all about reps for these young guys, and especially for Markkanen and Coby White. The idea that he didn't start last year wasn't that big of a deal when you think about context. And I think when you go back and you look at Coby White's stats and you look at Lowry's stats from his rookie year, you got to place context into this too, because otherwise comparing it is useless. So anybody who goes and compares the stats and says, well, they were kind of similar, although Coby White turned the ball over more than Lowry did. Lowry shot better from the field than Coby did. They both shot about the same amount of shots in their rookie seasons, respectively. But again, playing the same amount of minutes for Coby White, it's going to be about getting that experience. And I don't know, Lowri Markkanen was a way better shooter coming in as a rookie than Coby was projected. Lowri Markkanen was talked about as the best shooter in this in his draft class. That's how good it was. That's why I think the expectations might have been a little bit higher in terms of the offensive side of the ball than it was for Coby White in his first year. But again, context matters when you look at these stats, because again, think about who Coby White was playing with the majority of the year. If he wasn't on the floor next to Zach LaVine, who the hell else was scoring next to him? Who the hell did he have to pass to? So,
and primarily playing with a pretty weak second unit, Coby got a great opportunity to shoot this season. And like, you know, I haven't looked at their numbers recently, but It wouldn't surprise me if Coby's field goal attempts per game were higher than Lowry's this season, because Lowry was in that first unit that just did not work. Zach was certainly chucking up a bunch of shots. And you know, how many nights do we look at the box score? Like, wait, Lowry only had 8 shots tonight? Yeah, Coby was playing with kind of a scrub second unit, but he was given the opportunity to run that offense and take as many shots as he wanted.
Matt, you're spot on that. Coby White averaged 12.2 field goal attempts per game last year, and Lauri Markkanen averaged 11.8. So that's another huge issue.
So close, but yeah, there you go.
Well, I don't know if that necessarily answers your question, but we can kind of talk a little bit more about Coby White. I'd like to go back and look at Markkanen's stats from 3 years ago and then actually dive back into Coby White as well and see who he was on the floor with and provide maybe Bulls fans with a little bit more context there. But I would say people aren't overreacting necessarily, and you're going to have to allow him to grow, just like Carter, just like Markkanen, and the timetable's a little bit more pressed on Dunn. But for those three guys, we actually have to see them go out there and play games. For Markkanen, Carter especially, and Coby White, the next step is to see how he does as a starter, and I think we'll see that whenever there's Bulls basketball returning. Thanks for the voicemail. Let's get to the next one here.
Hey, this is Sammy in Minnesota, longtime Bulls fan, longtime listener. Just got done listening to Jordan's podcast from Monday on Zach LaVine, and wanted to pose a different question to you guys. The talk not being about whether Zach LaVine is a star player or not, but if we start looking at committing to Zach LaVine for the future, if we do lock him up long term, if we build around him, who are the complementary players that you guys would want us to go after to try and build around him? What is the ideal player to play with Zach LaVine? And is there another star in the league that you would look at and say, you know what, I think that him plus Zach LaVine is a great duo that can go a long ways? That's the kind of head-scratcher I have when I think about LaVine, is what do we do with him as far as surrounding him with the ideal player? What does the ideal player look like? Would love to get your guys' thoughts on that. Keep up the great work and keep up the great content. Thanks.
Matt, I'll let you touch on this one first. So maybe not even necessarily player names, but ideal fit for a player that would complement Zach LaVine a lot, or maybe multiple players that would complement Zach LaVine.
Yeah, so to me, the first thought I had was a really talented, above average, if not elite, floor vision, playmaking, pass-first point guard. That, to me, is the perfect piece to pair with Zach LaVine, as well as spacing the floor with some shooters. And maybe even, you know, I still could think a stretch four like Lowry could serve as another piece that fits well, and playing like a pick-and-roll, pick-and-pop two-man game. Because we didn't see any of that. We hardly any of that this season where Zach and Lowry played a two-man game. And I think it would have been very beneficial for them as just far as ways to get your two most talented and trying to build around pieces to build some chemistry with one another and to get good looks at baskets. But so not only a stretch four, but first and foremost, a playmaking great vision point guard. Because as much as we tasked Zach LaVine with being a primary ball handler this season, and even going back to last season, he clearly is not a playmaker. We've seen him make some improvements on that end, but his court vision is still not great. He still gets tunnel vision sometimes. He's incredible at creating his own shots, attacking the basket or shooting from outside. But the Bulls need a playmaker. I mean, somebody like, you know, Ben Simmons, or hell, even like a point forward like Luka, or, you know, a player along those lines who can actually just run the game and run the offense and allow Zach to operate as a star caliber kind of Jamal Crawford kind of player who is an extremely talented shooter and can break his guy down off the dribble, but not being tasked with running the offense. I think that's where Zach LaVine can thrive. And whether you say that qualifies as building a team around him, or if he's maybe the second piece or on par level with the other piece, whomever that piece might be, that's the perfect scenario to me based on everything we've observed about Zach LaVine's strengths and weaknesses so far.
I agree with the pass first guard, and a lot of what you're saying makes sense to me. And if I can maybe put some examples to those types of guys. And I was also thinking, too, like, defense is important. If Zach LaVine, I don't think is that bad of a defender, and I'm going to get a bunch of shit for that. I still do. When I say Zach LaVine, I don't think is necessarily a poor defender the way that Bulls fans characterize him in. But
or the way Jim Boylan characterizes him.
That, too. And he's improved every single year. You look at his defensive stats, he's improved every single year. But if that's going to be your primary score, we know one thing about Zach LaVine is he's got to have the ball in his hands in order to create, right? So if you're going to go that mentality, you need a player who's not only a pass-first guard, but also who's defensive-oriented. It's the guy they wanted Chris Dunn to be, but he's not going to be that guy. So they have to give up on that. It's the guy Thomas Satoransky was supposed to be and had a terrible year last year. So they need to find that player. And maybe it's not the superstar, but maybe it's somebody that borderlines on that. Then you also need I know we have two big guys right now, and maybe you can't find maybe you can't find a guard. You need Otto Porter type player that's healthy. If Otto Porter would be freaking healthy, man, he is the perfect. We've seen it time and time again. He's the perfect complement to Zach LaVine. Helps on the defensive side of the ball. Zach LaVine isn't the only guy out there that can knock down a three. It allows you to spread the floor, have more options. And Otto's done that when he's been on the floor and healthy. But I don't necessarily think that that's going to be your guy. But a guy like that. Or I even go back to looking at the success Zach LaVine had in Minnesota. He was so good on the floor with Ricky Rubio and Gorgui Dieng. If you can find a center, if you can develop Wendell into being a center you can run offensive sets through, I mean, you're talking about the easiest buckets imaginable for Zach LaVine. And if you've got multiple shooters on the floor too, it's just, again, who does that go back to? It goes back to the coaching staff and the development staff. Is what is your route for this? Is Zach LaVine the long-term option? Then start building towards that. Start developing players towards that. Instead, we hang in a lull in basically no man's land right now, trying to figure out all these different things. But though, that's my key, man, is defense, pass first, and maybe a center you can run the offense through. And I think two of those three you already have on this team and you already drafted.
And, you know, I assume you're referring to Wendell there.
Yeah, the pass first center is definitely Wendell. And Matt, you know, it makes me excited about Karnišovas too a little bit, is because think about the way that Denver ran their offense. A lot of it was run through Jokic, and maybe
right.
You can free things up as like Jamal Murray-esque, where Jamal Murray struggled his first couple of years and then all of a sudden turned it on because he didn't have to be that guy. He had other passers, he had other scorers. So maybe there's some magic Karnišovas can bring to this Bulls team for Carter.
And listen, I mean, like, Jokic is the best passing big man in the league right now. Right. I mean, I don't know if you have a counter offer of some other big who is as skilled at passing as Jokic is right now. But I would say consensus, Jokic is probably known as the best passing big man in the league right now. We have seen glimpses of Wendell's passing ability, which goes along with his court vision and basketball IQ, which is so high for a player his age. So that could be developed. I just think that in the offense that Jim installed this past season, Wendell looked lost, and we never really got to see Wendell's passing and playmaking ability from the center position, because it was like anytime he got the ball, he looked like a player who didn't know what to do with it, which clearly doesn't, you know, that doesn't line up. That doesn't mesh with what we know about Wendell's skills and the fact that he is a pretty skilled passing big man. It's the fact that he was getting probably mixed instructions and directions from the coaching staff about what to do. And it, you know, messed with his head, and he was playing mind games with himself every single time he got the ball. But I do think that that potential is there for Wendell.
Yeah, and if he can at least stay on the floor too, how about give him a defender or two so he doesn't have to run down the floor and make up for some two or three guys' mistakes and pick up two or three fouls during the game. So if he can stay on the floor, then yes, I completely agree with you. So again, I think Carter is the guy that I'm talking about to complement LaVine long term. Now, it's can Carter stay healthy and can he stay on the floor? It's another thing to be asked. But yeah, we're still missing that other piece, though, that pass first, defensive minded first guard. I don't think Thomas Satoransky's that guy, but that's another discussion for another day. Matt, let's get to one more voicemail and then we'll get out of here. And you guys will be able to hear the second portion of Darnell Mayberry with Matt yesterday. So let's hit up this voicemail.
Jordan, Matt, Bulls Nation, hello. This is Patrick from Hammond, Indiana. I have a few things. First, Lauri Markkanen. I question perhaps that he has the wrong work ethic. Reason being, because from my personal assessment, from year two to year three, I mean, obviously his year was bad, but I saw nothing that was added to his game from year two to year three. And on media day, Kendall Gill, Shanowski, and I think maybe you, Matt Peck, I think you guys were sitting down with Lauri, and Kendall Gill asked him specifically, what did you do over the summer to work on your game? And Lauri couldn't give him like a real answer. So that was telling to me. And secondly, I'm hearing that Jim Boylan might stay as the coach because of losses of revenue and blah, blah, blah. I think that's a bunch of malarkey. Push comes to shove, we need to start a GoFundMe and have 2 million Bulls fans donate $1 to pay off this man's salary if the cheap-ass mom and pops Reinsdorf don't want to pay that man to go away. But we have to get rid of that clown. Please. Guys, have a good weekend and take care. Bye.
Do you like Jim Bowling?
That's a great call. Thanks for the call, God. Patrick.
Patrick is my hero. First off, mad props for dropping the word malarkey in there. I think he might be a Joe Biden fan using that old guy lingo.
We have to get rid of that clown.
Secondly, I love the GoFundMe idea. This is so much better than a billboard.
It's the same thing, Jordan.
You and I got into it back in the day about the billboard, and I thought it was a stupid waste of money. This would be hilarious if the Bulls fan base collectively raised. I think you would probably have to be closer to $3 million to pay off Jim Boylan's remaining 2 years. I think he's making somewhere around $1.5, $1.6, $1.7 million. I still think that's an achievable thing. If the Reinsdorfs are like, well, we don't want to pay two coaches because there's, you know, this economic crisis that we're in. Oh, poor us, poor billionaires. So we got to keep Jim around. If the fan base just said, hey, dipshits, here's your $2.5 million. Now get the fuck rid of this guy. Oh, my God. How great would that be?
You're right.
The idea that I would be putting money directly into Jim Boylan's pocket, I can tell you I will not be donating to that. But, man, I don't know. This just, it sucks, man. Why do we have to go back every single week, back and forth? 1 week I'm reassured that, okay, I think Jim Boylan isn't going to be the head coach. And then now this week again, I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like, what happens if they actually do bring him back? And what does that mean long term for this team, too? What does that say about all of the hires that they made before this, if this is the way that they're going to do things? If they're going to tell their fan base the second and third moves I make as front office is to keep Jim Boylan here because the management and ownership like him a lot, you lose all trust. I don't care if you got rid of Gar Forman. I don't care if you didn't renew the contract of Jeff Tanaka. Those things should have been givens as soon as you got the job. And so should have Jim Boylan.
Right. Yeah. And I don't, you know, and we're going to talk about that even more tomorrow. So I don't want to talk about it right now. The other part of Patrick's question about Lowry is interesting to me. I think he brings up a fair point, which is, what did Lowry get better at this year? And I think most Bulls fans would collectively shrug and say, nothing, nada. There was no evidence of improvement in Lowry's game anywhere this season. And of course, that begs the follow-up question, whose fault is that? Is it Lowry's fault? Is it his coaching staff's fault? Or some combination of the two? And I think it's that third one. I think it's a combination of things. And yes, I'm not absolving Lowry of all guilt for the season that he just had, because it was terrible. And even just simple things like when Lowry would actually try and put the ball on the floor and make a move, or when he would like get the ball on the block or establish position on the block to try and post somebody up, everything he did looked weak. I'm not worried about his shot. I know, you know, his outside shot, he had some hot and some cold this season, just like he's had pretty much every season so far in his NBA career. The stuff that I'm worried about is he looks like a guy who is not meant to be an interior scorer, which not necessarily a bad thing. And I think what we have seen Lowry thrive at outside of just being a shooter and a spot-up shooter is a guy who slashes off the ball and can make really strong cuts and then, yes, finish dominantly at the rim. But the weeksy, you know, bullshit post-up attempts that we saw this season and put the ball on the floor attempts we saw in this season, I mean, he looked like a sixth grader going up against varsity. It was depressing.
Again, I'm with you and ask the same question. Whose fault is that? And I also think a lot of the mental side of things played a factor this year, Matt, too. Not being involved in the offense and not really knowing what his role was. And, you know, the criticism for the first time of Lauri Markkanen's game, we saw that this year. It was year three, and it was like, dude, we gave you a pass for your injuries last year, and we knew that wasn't your fault, and there was a lot of changes in the second year. But you came into this third year, and, you know, again, it's hard for me to think about criticizing Markkanen when I know the skill's there. I know the skill's there. We've seen it. It's like, how did Lauri Markkanen all of a sudden become an afterthought in Jim Boylan's offensive scheme? Why did you tell him to go get 45 more defensive rebounds in order for him to have the primary control and be able to push the ball up the floor? Like, to me, don't blame Lauri Markkanen. This is for Patrick, too. Don't necessarily blame Lauri Markkanen. Think about all the injuries he went through, too, and all of the work he put in for 6 months in the offseason to get it just completely flushed down the drain. Start first day of training camp, his second year. That played a huge factor into what he was able to do this offseason. He had to gain all of that back, plus whatever he was going to work on going into year three. So again, context matters when we talk about Markkanen and his development and also the pieces that are around him. And this isn't me making excuses for him, too. He played like garbage, and we said as much. But, I mean, you also have to create opportunities for yourself, too. And that was part of the problem, too, is Markkanen wasn't an aggressor. And finally, he said at the end, towards the end of, what, the last 3 weeks, he finally said, fuck it, I'm going to put the ball on the floor, and I'm going to try to do this myself. If nobody else is going to allow me to be a part of this offense, then I'm going to try to do it out there myself, even if I go 1-for-15.
Yeah, and, you know, some of that is, do you have that, you know, that it factor of demanding the ball? Do you have that quality that some NBA players say, I'm the best player on the floor right now, damn it, give me the damn ball? Because you need the ball to show what you could do and to get better and to prove that you can score on anybody. And we do not believe that that has been a part of Lowry's personality and mental makeup so far. He just looks very passive. And even, you know, in his post-game comments all season long, sometimes certainly he expressed frustration, especially when he was asked about his lack of shots on any given night, but certainly seems to be a guy who doesn't want to rub anybody the wrong way. A path of least resistance player is how Kendall has referred to him sometimes when I, you know, chat with Kendall about Lowry's potential. And so far right now, that seems to be the case. So, you know, if a change in system and coaching could somehow, you know, help Lowry manifest that extra level of intensity, which would then in turn hopefully turn him into a better basketball player, I'm still holding out hope that that can happen, but it's really hard to envision that right now based on the season he just had, which is disheartening.
And again, that's not Lowry's personality either. It never has. He's been pretty, you know, he's very quiet, keeps to himself. And, you know, even the comments that we do get from him, we don't get a whole lot, right? And, you know, maybe it's different on the basketball floor. Maybe, you know, he wasn't as vocal, but that was part of the criticism. A lot of people were like, okay, if you're not getting the opportunities that you want, that you feel that you deserve to make this offense better, you got to speak up, man. And I think the criticism coming down on Markkanen too, just seeing it in articles and in tweets and wherever this season, combine that with the factor of it was a dumpster fire of a season, all of that can mess with your head. And I feel like sports has a huge, or your mental side of things in sports has a huge factor on your performance on the floor. And we see it with there's a lot of other examples we can go into, but Markkanen, I think, dealt with a lot last year. But this is, again, when we get Bulls basketball back again, we need to see something. We need to see it early, too, to not lose complete faith in the entire fan base on him long term.
Yeah. And, you know, the last thing I would say on that is, you know, going back to Patrick's initial question of, you know, where did we see any improvement from Lowry this season? And does that mean he's a player with a lack of work ethic and didn't work on his game? Well, he was told to work on parts of his game that did not help his offensive game. Jim Boylan's idea for helping Lowry offensively, which I think you mentioned earlier, Jordan, is get more defensive rebounds so you can get the ball and bring the ball up the floor. That's bullshit. That's just bad advice. And so there is that factor. But also, the player development system on this team And some of that blame you could put on Jim Boylan. Some of that blame you put on the Reinsdorfs for, as Jim put it in his own words, referencing his conversation with Jerry, they told me to be the CEO. And we know how small this Bulls front office staff has been and basketball operations staff has been compared to the rest of the league building things out in the modern NBA. And it's been a joke and it's been a frustration for the fan base. And it was amazing to get the validation of a high, quickly rising front office executive from a different organization, a.k.a. our new GM, Mark Eversley, to come in and immediately comment on, gee, I thought it was weird that their quote-unquote player development staff was just one fucking guy whose laptop didn't work or whatever it was. Like, that's a joke. It's an absolute and utter joke, and it's unacceptable for an organization this big in this big of a market that prints money for that to have been the case. That is one more piece of optimism that I'm trying to hang on to right now, is that the player development staff and system will be grown out to a more appropriate size. And so maybe it's not all on Jim Boylan or whoever the coach is to figure out how to get these young players to get better at the NBA level.
I'm with you. I'm not concerned about the skill. I know the skill's there. So stay healthy. We need them to play games. We just need these guys to play games and get reps. And we can go into marketing more, but not here. I think that's going to about do it. Let's get to Darnell Mayberry. Darnell Mayberry, second part of your conversation, Matt, with Darnell. It was fantastic. Follow Darnell on Twitter, at Darnell Mayberry, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Chicago Bulls. We will be back tomorrow. Matt and I will be back tomorrow to kick your weekend off. We've got one voicemail to play, and of course, we're going to be talking a little bit more about Jim Boylan. Here's Darnell Mayberry.
You ain't no Michael Jordan.
Let's transfer now to some other decisions that AK and his staff will have this offseason that is kind of maybe behind the logic of, well, keep Jim Boylan because this is constrained already. We're worried about this. Let's just keep him for another year. Is the fact that AK won't have a whole lot of cap and or roster flexibility in this offseason, his first offseason as the VP of basketball ops, that like the Bulls have 13 contracts on the books next season. They have a couple of impending restricted free agents to make up their minds on, but that, hey, well, if they have to basically return the same roster again next year anyway, let's give Jim Boylan another year, and then we'll look to make our real big changes and the new front office really takes power a year from now. I don't like that logic. I'm just kind of laying out how some people are thinking about it. But to that end, how do you see AK and Eversley approaching those decisions to make on names like Chris Dunn, Denzel Valentine? You know, there's a much more modest qualifying offer for Shaq Harrison, who serves similar purposes to Chris Dunn. How do you think AK and Eversley are going to approach those decisions?
I do know for a fact that they like a lot of the talent on this roster. They said that they're not going to be in a rush to get rid of players and just, you know, just for the sake of doing it. And not just that, but again, they like the talent that's here. You know, how good that talent is, I think they're still trying to figure that out. And that's one of the difficulties of not having competitive environments right now where they can do things as a team. But they're going to be patient, and we've seen that, and I think we're going to continue to see that. The players who are coming up, I have a hard time believing that they're going to want to bring back. Just when new executives take over, I mean, the best thing for them, and generally what we see is, you know, they like to try to have clean books, and the books are going to be clean going forward starting next year. So I think they're going to want to preserve that as much as possible to give themselves a clean slate to try to then tinker and make moves to try to build this thing up. I don't expect a full teardown, but I do think that they're going to let some players go. You know, some of those guys that you just mentioned who, you know, are already entering the stage of their careers where they're going to be in their second contracts. Doesn't make a lot of sense to give those guys a second contract when they haven't really proven themselves capable of performing consistently. And the other thing is they're not attached to those guys. You know, they don't have a reason to hang on to the Denzel Valentines and the Chris Dunns and whoever else you want to throw in that boat. You know, they didn't draft them. They didn't acquire them or trade for them. So They can get rid of them with no problem, and it's not there. It's not on their head. So I don't expect some of those guys to be back, but I also expect the management team to take their time and be patient with some of the guys who are still under contract and see what they have, the Zach LaVines, the Lauri Markkanens, Kobe White's, Wendell Carter Jr.'s, and even Otto Porter. You know, he's going into the last year of his deal. Assuming he picks up that option, which I think we all know he will. I think they want to see what they have in those guys, but the restricted free agents and those types, I don't see those guys coming back.
Well, and, you know, especially if they do give Jim another year to hang around and actually listen to his opinions, we know Denzel's gone, right? Because, you know, he was in Jim's doghouse all season. You know, he needs some seasoning. Why is he not playing? Well, I think he needs to play more. Man, so, you know, going back to our list of what were some of the most ridiculous things Jim Boylan did and said season.
He said, because I said so.
Because I said so. That's definitely one towards the top of the list for all the ridiculous things that Jim said to the media this season. Because I said so. My God. What the hell?
That's something I say to my six-year-old.
Right, exactly. And again, that's one of the big grievances that fans and I think the players, though they're not necessarily willing to come out and say it, have with Jim. He treats them like children. Yes, they are young NBA players, many of whom are one and done kids from college, 19, 20, 21 years old. But the whole preparing the child for the road, not the road for the child quote from back in last season, that one is up there for me too. It's just like, come on. Yes, these are young men, but they are men. And you're treating them like children.
It's bad, man. I didn't, you know, Matt, you know, before, you know, as you were setting up this thing, I had reservations about doing it because I didn't really want to continue to talk about Jim Boylan and pile on. Like I said, I just felt like I had nothing to add to the conversation. Now you're getting me fired up because we're going to have to go through this guy a whole nother year. And I just, it's such a waste of time. It is such a waste of time.
I want to ask you about the Delete 8 before I let you go, but real quick, do you think, I know we talked about all the hypotheticals and why is he still here and will he still be here? I am still believing in my heart of hearts that the next time the Bulls are playing an actually meaningful, competitive NBA game, Jim will be gone and that AK is just doing his due diligence and you know, maybe appeasing ownership a little bit because they know they like him. Before being able to say, I've evaluated Jim, let's go in a new direction. I am still clinging to that belief. If pressed, if you were to put money on it, do you think that Jim is gone or Jim is still here by the time the Bulls are playing competitive basketball again?
I think he's still here.
Oh, Darnell, don't do this to me.
Don't blame me. Don't shoot the messenger. I think from everything that I'm gathering, these guys, they don't want to lose that money. And Arturis, again, I mean, he can't, I don't think, in good conscience, fire the guy and not have, like, if you got Rick Carlisle or Brad Stevens or Greg Popovich or Eric Spoelstra or Doc Rivers lined up, that's one thing. You don't have that. So, again, I'm getting into the defending Jim Boylan territory, right, which I don't like, but I just think, given the finances and the situation that we talked about earlier, I think that he's going to come back, and I think he's going to be the coach for 2021.
Oh, see, and then again, that leads me back to, well, what about just elevating Chris Fleming for a season to make all these players hate their lives a little less who are so ready to be rid of Jim and elevate Chris Fleming's salary to reflect that of a head coach instead of an assistant coach, just the same way they did for Jim when they fired Fred. That way they can still save a few pennies and wait for the big next offseason to make their first handpicked, give them a real big boy NBA head coaching contract with maybe some other interesting head coaching names become available and still just get rid of the problem that is Jim in the meantime. But, you know, let's move on because it just makes both of us mad to talk about it. So the Delete 8, which might be one reason why AK is still letting Jim hang around, such an idea would give them the opportunity to evaluate Jim up close and in person instead of just watching the game tape from before they took the job. we heard a couple weeks ago, hey, there's a maybe second bubble happening for the Delete 8 teams, and it'll probably be in Chicago. And then I feel like we just haven't heard anything since then. No more updates, no more. They're still talking about this. Have you heard anything as far as the any developments or conversations beyond the initial report we heard a couple weeks ago? And where do you stand on good idea, bad idea for the Delete 8?
It's a terrible idea. I understand why some executives would want to do it, especially you're not going to have summer league. For your younger players, it could be, you know, a pivotal little training exercise, but most of the guys aren't going to want to play in that thing. And I do know that, you know, the Bulls feel a little differently about that, but I'll believe it when I see it. Good luck getting Zach LaVine and Otto Porter and Lauri Markkanen to say, yeah, I'm going to go up against the Cavs and the Pistons third string. Like, why would they do that? And I'm going to come from all over the country and the world. Tomas Satoransky really going to come back from Europe to take part in this thing? I don't think so. So Thad Young, you know, while he's spending time with his wife and two children, he's going to want to blow that off to cut his vacation short and come back for the Delete 8. It's not happening. So, and if I'm wrong, you know, fine, so be it. But I'll believe it when I see it. But I'm hearing that it's, you know, there's a lot of logistical issues, and this thing could be on fumes at this point.
Yeah.
The teams are going to have to spend a lot of money the way the NBA wants to do it, setting up a bubble and putting players and teams, staff members into a bubble similar to what they're doing in Orlando. And I'm not sure that that's what these executives had in mind when they initially, you know, campaigned for it. So everything I'm hearing, it sounds like it's a struggle and it might not happen.
Shout out campaign, by the way, speaking of.
what happened with him?
No, you just said the word campaign. But I think he did get picked up by an NBA team recently.
Yeah,
I feel like
it's Phoenix, I think, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is. It is Phoenix.
Yeah.
So see, we can, you know, we're going to watch him hit 7 3.5. It's going to be a great time.
it's going to be the campaign Ryan Arcidiacono show.
Oh, man, so many charges drawn. Oh, my goodness.
Nobody wants to see that. Nobody.
No.
The fans don't even want to see that.
And, you know, I think that is the main point to me. Not only is it the logistics problem, and, you know, we heard the head of the Players Association, Michelle Roberts, saying about the concept of the second bubble. Like, we have to make sure that we go through every single step and every single precaution the exact same way to ensure that this bubble would have the same safety levels and precautions of the first bubble. And that doesn't seem to be very realistic, especially given the calendar and the timeline right now, if you're really trying to turn this around quickly and start the following season in December or early January. That just, all of the steps to get this Orlando bubble ready, the Delete 8 bubble is months behind. And it just doesn't seem feasible. But I think even more so than that is the point that you just brought up, which is if you're the Bulls, if you're a player on this Bulls roster, namely, you know, Zach LaVine, a guy playing on a very team-friendly deal who still has at least one gigantic contract in front of him in his career. Lauri Markkanen coming into a year where he's trying to prove himself and prove that he could be close to something like a max player. A veteran like Thad Young who has family to worry about. All of the different reasons. You mentioned Satoransky, you know, living, you know, back home overseas in Europe right now. I can't see all of these Bulls players signing up for a pointless bubble excursion against the other seven awful teams in the league to say, yeah, this will be fun. Let's do this. And this is where the logic just really boggles my mind. If AK is waiting on a potential second bubble so that he can evaluate Jim Boylan, so that he can then come to ownership and say, we got to get rid of this guy. What are you actually going to gain and or learn by the back end G League quality of Bulls players on a roster being coached by Jim Boylan? Because guess what? We've already seen that before.
Nothing. You're not going to learn anything. And I think that's just a cop out. I'm not buying it. But here's what I will say. The same thing that's keeping Jim Boylan around is the same thing that's probably going to prevent this second bubble from happening, and that's money. With teams losing so much, they're not going to want to commit dollars that they don't have at this point to getting their second and third string guys together for however long that second bubble was intended to be for. And I just think that's going to be the ultimately the reason why we're not going to see it. Again, I could be wrong, but I just – the things that I'm hearing, I just don't think teams are going to want to commit those resources, that level of resources to playing something that's ultimately meaningless. I hate to use that word because I do know that – like Coby White could probably benefit from some extra run. Daniel Gafford could benefit from some extra run. But, you know, are you going to commit, you know, high into seven figures to get Coby White and Daniel Gafford some extra run? I just don't – that doesn't make financial sense. It doesn't make business sense. And I think that's going to be ultimately the reason why we probably won't see it.
I'm with you, man. Before I let you go, I'm curious if you have talked to any of your colleagues in the world of, you know, NBA reporting who are in the bubble. Down in Orlando, and have kind of, you know, we've gotten a couple of interviews here and there from members of the media and even players who are down in that Orlando bubble and have been for the past couple of weeks. As you know, somebody who covers a team who didn't go to the bubble, I'm curious if you've heard anything about what it's like to be media down there, and also hypothetically, if the Bulls were to go to the bubble, would that have been something that you would have been up for and wanted to do, or would you have been you know, someone who had reservations about that idea?
Matt, can you hear me okay?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was not going to go to the bubble, more than likely. It's a lot of money, and I just don't think that it's worth it. You don't get great access. You know, it's not like you're getting to go out and hang out in the players' lounge or you know, go to dinner with anyone. Like, I wouldn't have been you know, been able to cozy up with Otto Porter and get some kind of exclusive. Like, you get just generic access, and I just don't think that it's ultimately worth it for a lot of outlets. The Athletic has sent a reporter down. I think we're going to have two reporters who are going to basically split up the time, one at one time and then pass the torch to the other person. But, you know, those are national writers. You know, they're going to try to do it from a national level and not just a local level. So it wouldn't have been worth it, I don't think, for us. And then I forgot the other half of your question.
If you had chatted with anybody, maybe one of your Athletic colleagues who is down there, just about what the bubble experience has been like.
No, one media member hit me up not too long ago, a couple of days back, but we didn't get into what it's like for him. I'm just kind of following it on social media like everyone else, and people showing their daily routines of getting tested and quarantining and, you know, having their food delivered and set outside the front door. You know, that just seems like it's totally different, man. And that's, I would not have wanted to sign up for that. I have no FOMO of, you know, the bubble. I'm good. I'm good on that.
Yeah, I hear you, man. It doesn't sound like the most fun. And credit to everyone in the media and the players themselves, of course, and everyone on these you know, team personnel who are in the bubble and doing this very brave and probably not very fun thing to go try to finish this season and crown a 2020 NBA champion. Which, by the way, are you putting your money on Joakim Noah and his Clippers, or are you picking LeBron's Lakers or maybe Giannis's Bucks to win it all? Who you got?
You know, for the longest, I've always thought Clippers Bucks and probably Clippers. With this bubble, I have no idea. I think anyone could win it, you know, of the true contenders, just because it's going to be so much different. And who knows what we can expect, especially like Russell Westbrook just got down there.
Right.
You know, these guys aren't in game shape. None of them are in game shape. And then some of these guys who've had to quarantine and then that's another setback that's going to delay their process. So I just think this is going to be so funky that anyone of the true contenders could really win it. Who do you like?
I like the Clippers and Joakim Noah's Finals MVP, baby. Come on now.
Okay, so that's your heart. What does your head say?
my head also says the Clippers. Okay. I think that, you know, the Lakers have taken a couple hits roster wise, and yeah, LeBron is LeBron, and Anthony Davis is a great talent. Anthony Davis still hasn't proven anything at the playoff level, Kawhi is a magician, and his half-court game, especially in playoff series and in a playoff game when things slow down a little bit, is such an asset. If Kawhi and Paul George and all the other role players on that Clippers team are healthy, I just think they have the most versatile roster of these, you know, bubble competitors as far as, you know, going big, going small, a lot of defensive versatility. And perhaps more so than the Lakers, I think they have a more well-rounded roster. So I think they can get past the Lakers if they meet them in the conference finals. And I think that Kawhi and his experience will certainly be enough to take care of the Bucks, you know, because we saw that last year.
Yeah, I agree with you. And it is going to be fun to see Joakim out there and some meaningful games again. That's going to be really, really fun. But I will say, the Clippers' second-best player has had some playoff duds. He's had some stinkers, and I'm talking about Paul George. So
that's true.
He's gonna have to bring his A game if the Clippers are gonna even think about winning a championship. Because as talented as that team is from top to bottom, they're gonna need their two best players to play like they're capable of playing. I think we know what we're gonna get from Kawhi, but Paul George, over the last couple of years, has been a question mark in the playoff. He got outplayed by Joe Ingles a couple of years ago. So, you know, against Portland last year, he didn't have the best series. So, you know, right. I know he had the shoulder injury, but he's got to be able to step up and give Kawhi some help and be that Robin to his Batman.
It's okay, though, you know, because I'd like, even if Paul George is still, you know, playoff mediocre Paul George, playoff Joakim, man. Dude's gonna rise to the occasion.
When's the last time we've seen playoff Joakim?
Let's see, 2015. Oh my God, is that right? Knicks weren't in the playoffs when he was playing with them. Grizzlies didn't go to the playoffs last year, right? No. I think the Bulls lost to the Cavs in round two in 2015 is the last time we saw playoff Joakim, because the following year, 15-16, Fred's first year, the Bulls missed the playoffs. And then by the time they got back to the playoffs as an 8 seed in 17, the three alphas year, Joakim was gone.
So we're going to take the optimistic glass half full angle here and say he's got fresh legs.
Oh, absolutely. Have you seen? I've been watching his workout videos on Instagram religiously. And yes, I have a borderline inappropriate crush on Joakim Noah, but that's what happens when you're a Bulls fan who, you know, had so much love for those, you know, the baby Bulls into the D Rose years. Joakim was always, to me, the central figure of that. Everything he did on the court, everything he did and said off the court. I mean, Joakim's in my top five favorite Bulls of all time. So, yeah, I got a soft spot for him, and I'm rooting for him hard. I want to see him get that ring. And guess what? Yeah. I don't know if you knew this, Darnell. You can watch Joakim and the Clippers play at 2 p.m. Central Time today, Wednesday, on NBA TV. They're playing Orlando in the first exhibition game in the bubble.
All right. That'll be good. And they got to – and there should not be any load management. You know, these games all matter now, so hopefully we get some good basketball. I have my doubts about that, like I said, because no one's in game shape, but you know, it's just good to be able to watch basketball again.
I feel you, man. I feel like we've all been waiting for months and it's finally here. We're on the precipice. It's so exciting. And as always, it's so exciting to chat with you, Darnell. We really appreciate your insight. We really appreciate your willingness to stop by Locked On Bulls anytime we ask you to. If any of our listeners are out there are not yet subscribed to The Athletic, you should. You have to. It is a must as far as diversity of content here for our Chicago sports teams. Amazing content. No pop-ups, no ads, no bullshit, just great reporting and great journalism. And Darnell is one of the greatest examples of that as the senior Bulls writer. Follow him on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry. Subscribe to The Athletic. Darnell, enjoy your summer, my man, and enjoy some of this NBA basketball we got coming up. Hopefully we'll talk again in the not too distant future.
All right, man. Always a pleasure. Thanks for having me, Matt.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com